borderline borderline. Just what I can see, I believe. Oh, I believe.
This was and continues to remain one of the most powerful public displays of faith I have seen in a long, long time. It wasn't just the performers on the stage, but it was the reaction of the audience unashamedly worshiping, hands raised in the air, testifying to their own faith. Boy, did it inspire me. Dope Sax is in the house. Good morning, sir.
Hey, where was that from?
Country Music Awards. Jelly Roll, Brooks and Dunn, their famous song, I Believe. Mm-hmm. And it was just so overwhelmingly powerful. That morning, before I came in, I watched it 6 times on video. Mm. And then as an interesting twist of fate or luck or just divine providence, I always open the show with Whitney Houston's national anthem, and for whatever reasons, I couldn't get it to play. It wouldn't. There was no audio coming out of it. The video was running, but I had queued up that song to play it at the next break, so I just quickly pulled that down and played this song to start the show. And so it was the 7th time I had listened to it that morning in the course of 2.5 hours, and it just was so. It wasn't the song. I've loved the song forever. I love Brooks and Dunn. I've been huge fans of them.
Just that performance.
And so I've loved the song forever. I believe it's so, I mean, it's who I am. I believe I'm a true believer. It's a great strength and a great weakness in my part, but I am a true believer in the things that I believe in. And so that song has always touched me. But the way that it went about in front of thousands of people who were in the arena that night, and they were unashamedly proclaiming their faith as well as those 3 men stood on the stage. At one point, Jelly Roll raises his hand in the air and says, I love you, Lord. Hmm. How often do you see those kinds of things happening? But you know what? They're starting to happen now. Hmm. Jameis Winston, who's now the quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, I followed him his entire career going back to Florida State and college. Mm-hmm. The man he is today was not the man that he was then. Mm. And everything that he talks about, what he reminds me of is someone who's a new Christian. He's on fire for Christ, and he wants to make sure that everything that happens in his life, he gives proper glory to God. The Bible has always been the best-selling book in all of world history. Sales are up 20% right now, and what's unique about it is the buyer is young men. Typically, that is done by women. The buyer is young men who are now hungering for something different because they believe maybe something different is possible.
You see it. You see it all throughout our culture, and it's undeniable.
Yeah.
You know, you see someone like Jordan Peterson, who's walking his own faith journey publicly, and the way that his books about that journey sell and inspire people. And just what happened in that election, the way that that it became a deeper than normal after the assassination, and the way it impacted Trump, and the way he started talking about God in a way he hadn't before. And
I really do believe this, and you're the person that alerted me to it, so I give you proper credit. I do believe we will look back. If things unfold as we believe they may, we will look back at July 13th, 2024, as one of the most pivotal moments in modern presidential history. Mm. That was the moment Donald Trump himself was changed, and I think that, frankly, had that moment not happened, I don't know if he would have won, but. Donald Trump has changed.
Or if the bullet had been in it.
Well, right. But I mean,
centimeter over.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, if he hadn't moved his head, he's talked about that. But I think that moment, as it would anyone, you know, it forces you to confront your own mortality.
I mean, the way that he, because he went right back out to the convention.
Right.
The thing on his ear.
That was And let me tell you, that Monday night at the convention when Donald Trump walked out,
we were there.
The ground in Wisconsin was shaking from that moment. It was, honestly.
It's an incredible moment.
It was an incredible moment. And I never will forget, for as long as I live, unless my mind fades from me, as you know it sometimes does, when I got that phone call from you sitting at the bar at Giordano's in Chicago. I will never forget that moment because I answered the phone, "Hey, Dove," and you said, "They shot him."
Yeah.
And I said, "Shot who?" And you said, "They shot Trump."
Yeah.
I thought it was a metaphor. I did. I couldn't imagine it. I thought it was a metaphor.
Yeah.
And you said, I thought he was dead. He was down on the ground for a long time. I thought he was dead.
Hmm.
And I never will forget that because we're in Chicago now. Let's keep in mind, we're in the state of Illinois. It's been a blue state for as long as I can remember. And I said to Dee Dee, "They shot Trump." And she was stunned. And it wasn't on the news yet. It was so fresh because you were watching the rally live.
Mm.
And it was so fresh. It wasn't on the news yet. And people heard me say that. And then all of a sudden, that was the chatter everywhere. This guy says Trump was shot and it's not on the news. And they're asking the bartender, "Can you find the news? We got to find the news." And the whole bar, we're in Chicago, Illinois.
So what?
And the whole bar was on Trump's side.
There's not another person on the planet who gets shot in the head and then gets up with a fist raised and says, "Fight, fight, fight." There's only one, and that's because you could only get into that state of mind after being through the kind of unique, torturous travails that they've put him through.
Well, he also uniquely, I believe, understands the moment, and he's done that throughout his entire life. Forget politics. He's always understood the moment.
But when it unfolded the way it did, the election was probably over at that point, because what that represents to everyone across the planet is a level of courage, a level of authentic grace, you know, under fire, the concern for the crowd, the way he then honored Corey Compatore, who was killed,
amazing,
and kept him at the forefront.
Amazing.
There was so much revealed about his character, about the way he got right back out. And he candidly said recently, "I did that because if I didn't get right back out, I didn't know if I could."
Exactly.
And he got right back out. Think about standing right back out, as exposed as he constantly is. You saw what happened to that United Healthcare CEO yesterday.
Yeah, right? It was amazing.
It's actually, you know, if when you read about these things, it's not actually that hard to, if that's one's goal and you have some money behind you, to target an individual in our world. And Trump just goes out there in these massive crowds right after that. But once people saw that, on a subconscious level, you got to really hate the man to not want him to be the leader in a difficult world.
Well, you were here, and I talked about it. I said on the day after Labor Day, this election is over.
Mm.
We just don't know the outcome. I said, I believe I know what the outcome is, but this election is done. That moment changed everything. I don't know if he would have won without that moment. I think he would have won because she was offering nothing to the nation. She offered nothing the whole time. She tried to run the Biden basement campaign, except she didn't have a pandemic to give her cover this time. Even her own people are saying now that the thing that hurt her the most was she had no primary, so she wasn't tested. You know, when she was in the primary before, she dropped out before it got real, before there was ever even any voting. She got no traction in the primary in 2020. But I think the moment January 13th cemented his victory, when he got back out there, as you're saying, and I talked a lot about it. Can you imagine what was going through his head? Can you imagine? I would love, if I ever get the chance, I've spoken to him five times. Six, because I forgot he was on the show. If I ever get the chance, the question that I want to ask Donald Trump was, when he walked back out on the stage in October in Butler, Pennsylvania, what was really going through his mind?
Mm.
That's what I want to know.
That was one of the epic, as I was saying.
Yes.
As I was saying.
When he said that, as I was saying, I got chills.
As I was saying.
As I was saying.
And what a beautiful, beautiful line.
I got chills when he said that. It's 9:16. You're on the LenLibby.com listener line. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Ray. How are you?
I'm good.
I want to thank you for the other day when I called you. And I found what I was looking for. It took me 3.5 hours, but I went down to a building there and sat there for 3.5 hours. I figured it out. So.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Just talking to you got my head going, and so thank you. One thing I want to do know is, why do we need to know about President Kennedy? It's been 20-something years.
It's been 60 years.
60 years. I don't know what I'm talking about. Why do we want to bring up all that?
I personally believe, and as you know, I'm a student of history and a student of the government, I personally believe that particular moment is when the distrust of government by the American people really began to unravel. I think that moment alone was the start. And keep in mind what followed behind it. You had the distrust. You had people who, and like myself, I'm very skeptical of the conclusion of the Warren Commission. Then you had Vietnam happening, and that created all kinds of chaos in this country, and brave men and women being sent over to a nation that most people couldn't tell you where it was on the planet, and they're dying, and for what objective, it was never even really completely clear, especially to those who were serving. And then you had Bobby, and you had Martin killed.
Yeah.
Hang on. You asked me a question. I'm trying to answer it for you.
Okay.
So then you had those two events happen. When Martin Luther King was murdered, that shook this country because it especially shook the black community because many people who are older than me, but I have asked them because I'm always interested if you were live during the moment. And many black men who are older than me told me that it was a message to them that if you're a black man in America and you step out of turn, they'll get you. And so it actually sent shudders through, not through the radicals. The radicals don't care. They burn down buildings. They do whatever. They're irrational. But to normal people, it sent a message to them. If you're a black man and you step out of turn, they'll get you. And that shook them. And then Bobby got shot running for president. He probably would have beaten Nixon in 68. And then you go from those events to just shortly thereafter, Richard Nixon wins arguably the largest landslide in American history in 1972. And 20 months later, he's resigning from the presidency, the first to do so, for corruption. And again, shaking the government, shaking people's faith in all of this. So you had a 14-year period where such traumatic things happened in our nation, and many of them involved the government or government deception. And I think that is what has created such a lack of trust in the federal government. So I think knowing the truth, if the Warren Report is correct, we ought to know. And if it is correct, then we accept it. And maybe that would rebuild some level of trust in somebody like me, because I'm very skeptical.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense, because Bobby Kennedy stopped his campaign to go down there to talk to the people when they shot Martin Luther King.
Yeah, that's one of the great speeches in American history.
Yeah. And one of the most powerful moments, if you'll recall.
Yep. Because that's what he didn't want, the black people to get all upset and think that they were targeting the black community, and that's why he went down there.
Well, I think he was already en route to Indianapolis to speak, and I think he heard it during the flight that Martin Luther King had been killed right before they took off. And then he flew in and spoke to the crowd and spoke about what he had been through when his brother had been killed.
Yeah. Everybody hang on.
Oh.
Could you lower those signs, please? I have some very sad news for all of you, and that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it's perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in. For those of you who are black, considering the evidence evidently is that there were white people who were responsible. You can be filled with bitterness and with hatred and a desire for revenge. We can move in that direction as a country in greater polarization. Black people amongst blacks and white amongst whites, filled with hatred toward one another. Or we can make an effort, as Martin Luther King did, to understand and to comprehend and replace that violence, that stain of bloodshed that is spread across our land, with an effort to understand compassion and love. For those of you who are black and are tempted to be filled with hatred and mistrust of the injustice of such an act against all white people, I would only say that I can also feel in my own heart the same kind of feeling. I had a member of my family killed, but he was killed by a white man. But we have to make an effort in the United States. We have to make an effort to understand, to get beyond or go beyond these rather difficult times. My favorite poem, my favorite poet was Aeschylus. And he once wrote, "Even in our sleep, pain which cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart, until in our own despair, against our will, comes wisdom through the awful grace of God." What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another, feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country, whether they be white or whether they be black.
I'm going to end it right there. That was Bobby Kennedy, the night that Martin Luther King was killed, April the 4th, I believe, 1968. Those words were extraordinary in the moment, and then to put them in the context of 2 months and 2 days later, he himself would be killed. Dove Sachs is here. So, Larry, I don't know if that answered your question,
yes,
but that's
did.
What I believe.
Yes, it did. I haven't heard that in a long time, and it, yeah, it would now that you played that and stuff. But there was something on the news about the Warren Commission that they lied in the book that they sent out that they come up with. I guess there's a passage or something in the book there where it's not true.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. So just, you know, look, I've said this forever.
You're just scratching the surface, Larry.
I don't know. I wasn't there, so I can't speak definitively, but this is what I will tell you. I have such a distrust of government in this country, not of the documents that founded government, but of the people who execute it, that until I am satisfied by seeing those documents myself, I will not believe the Warren Commission.
It may be true.
The Warren Commission may be accurate. I have no way to know. But until I see all of those documents and for my own personal satisfaction, get to review them and understand them and ingest them, I will not believe anything they tell me, because almost every time I'm told something by somebody involved with the government, it turns out at some point not to be true. Hey, Larry, appreciate the phone call. Thank you. Dove, I don't know how you feel about what I just said, but that's how I feel. I'm 63 years old in January, and I've just seen way too much. I know way too much, that some of it which I can't talk about because it's been shared in confidence. And I don't trust the executioners of government. I believe in our Constitution. I think it's the second most consequential document ever written other than the Bible. But the executioners of government in modern day America are just not people that I would trust my children with. That's the best standard I could give for my grandchildren.
You know, I think because government involves so many people, it's more structural. It's more the explosive growth of the state's role in our lives over the last 250 years, really, but then the last 100 years, and then with technology being what it is now, that just means something else. It just very practically, we can quickly lose it all the freedom, all the privacy, and so that's coming to a head. You know, there's a model, the social credit system that the Chinese have implemented is really dystopian, and that's what.
That's a great word, dystopian, because it's exactly what it is.
Right, but the folks, you know, who would have been in control had Trump not won, were looking at that fondly, and longingly, and so, it's a real blessing, man.
Yeah.
It's a real blessing that
it
we're
is a real
that
blessing.
We're, that the opportunities that are now opened up.
I will tell you personally, just on a personal Ray Richardson level, nothing to do with any of this trappings of this job. On a personal level, and I think my wife will attest to it, I'm happier and I feel refreshed and renewed. Mm. I just am. It's 9:28. You're on the LynnLibby.com listener line. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hey.
Hey guys, Dove, how you doing? Ray, how you doing?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. It's
got to be quick. We're gonna run out of time.
It's not snowing, so and my plow is ready to go. But guess who's not happy? There's no white stuff, so Hunter's not happy.
it's kind of funny. You should be a stand-up comedian. Not bad.
Yeah, well, I'm standing up right now, so maybe there's something. No.
You know, if that blow was his in the White House, that just is another notch in his insane life story that's yet
but
to
Ray,
be. Go ahead, Scott. Sorry.
Well, let me get to my.
Got to be quick. Got to be quick, that. Ethan.
Ray, I got to. Maybe I'll have to call back another day. But, Ray, I want to ask you, what does it take to start? Because I know you're an expert. What does it take to start a new party in this country?
It takes
30 seconds.
Really,
go.
Really something. You know, it's going to take a lot of money, and I mean a lot of money, because if it's a small effort, all it will do, depending on which side of the aisle it's associated with, will undermine one of the existing parties. So, if it's going to be a sincere effort to challenge the existing two-party system, it's going to take a lot of money. It's going to take a clear ideology, meaning what do you stand for? Do you have the ability to really articulate what is different than about what we have? And that is going to require money and a lot of it in order to make that happen. Unfortunately, Ethan, we have got to run. Sorry about that. It is 9:30. At Community Pharmacy, we are Maine's largest Maine-owned and Maine-operated pharmacy. With 8 convenient locations and 70 trusted employees that live in your community, you can count on us because you know us. Go to communityrx.com to find out more.
The administration is renewing a push for airline consumer protections, saying it'll take steps toward requiring airlines to pay cash compensation and cover lodging and meals for passengers who are stranded when in